Hi, this is Roxanne and Create Abundance Now. Create Abundance Now is about the sharing of knowledge and truth, the likes of which will bring you the true abundance in your life you were born to live. We've got some special guests coming up today. I am so blessed to have Nuke Sanchez and Tomas Vieri here to talk about their book, Take Me to Truth, and we're going to get into that in just a minute, but before that, in 2 weeks, we have a guest coming on, a very special guest, Dr. Anne-Marie Evers. She's an ordained minister, and she has several books on affirmation. Please go to the website at bbsradio.com and check for the upcoming guest, and check out her website at Anne-Marie Evers.com. She's an amazing woman. Now, for today's show, I can't tell you how excited I am. This is an amazing book. I've been reading it. It was released in September of 2007, and it became an almost immediate bestseller with Amazon. Do you want enlightenment? We can realize enlightenment while we still cling to our mistaken identity, the ego. The negative ego is the one adversary we face in life, not only in our personal lives, but in the wider environment. No problems exist outside of the projected reality. And undoing the ego is a mandatory step in the evolution of consciousness and an absolute prerequisite for enlightenment. What Nuke and Tomas do with Take Me to Truth is a powerful six-stage navigational guide to the ego release. If you genuinely want unshakable peace, joy, and love in this lifetime, believe me, this book will help you identify and release the one obstacle to love's infinite presence in your life, the ego. And now, welcome.
Hey, g'day.
How are you guys doing?
Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Nuke.
That was a lovely intro. Thanks, Roxanne.
You're welcome. It's all true.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. The truth within.
For sure. Thank you for that.
Tell me more about this book. And you both have, I just was checking out, you have an amazing odyssey you're starting on, March 22nd, 2008, you begin traveling with seminars.
Yep.
That you're doing throughout the country?
Yeah, it's right throughout the country. I think we've got 15 different workshops in the States alone.
Oh.
And then we're in the UK and then back to Australia and then we'll be back here again.
Oh, and this is all on Take Me to Truth.
Yes, all about undoing the ego, the one adversary that we have, as you quite rightly pointed out.
Yes. Well, I can't agree more with the book. And let me also say that if anybody's read A Course in Miracles, I would say that this is the predominant book that I would say you've got to use along with A Course in Miracles to really get what the Course is getting at on a deeper level.
Yeah, it is being known rapidly since its release in September as being a fantastic companion to A Course in Miracles.
Absolutely.
As you probably know, A Course in Miracles is a very, very big book to learn, and there are 365 individual lessons that are supposed to be taken for, you know, each day.
Mm-hmm.
Each lesson is each day for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And Take Me to Truth has been written to sort of help people through that process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So, I've got a little surprise for both of you.
Uh-oh.
No,
surprises
it's not.
Are good?
It's a good surprise. I was reading your book, and I came across a section in it called PIQ.
Yes.
And the PIQ, or peak formula.
Mm-hmm.
PIQ. Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad I found that.
Yeah, we'll explain that for your audience.
Oh, please do. We've been using it in our relationship, and it's been phenomenal.
Oh, wonderful, yeah. In the undoing process, one of the tools that we found that really helps is this PIQ, which stands for Presence, Inquiry, and Quantum Forgiveness. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is in presence. It's about as soon as you recognize that you've lost peace. So that might be sweaty palms, your pulse is racing, you feel your blood pressure rising, you suddenly find yourself in conflict or feeling anger coming on, whatever the case is, it's a loss of peace. It's about, at that moment, stepping into the observer role.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, step into the observer role in the here and now. As soon as you do that, what happens is that it goes into the next part, which is the inquiry, like what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? What is actually happening here? Mm-hmm. What is it that I'm resisting? So it's about getting very quickly to, oh, why have I lost peace? Because what most of us do is that until we've investigated and undone some of the ego, we think that we are our emotions. We think that we are our thoughts. We think that we are our actions and reactions. So the second we lose peace, the ego being the default operating system of our lives, it immediately goes into attack or defense. And so with that, the ability to act in the moment with any kind of love or forgiveness is gone, because the way the ego works is, oh, you're threatened here, we must attack. Mm-hmm. That's what it wants to do. Mm-hmm. But with presence, inquiry, and then quantum forgiveness, as I said, in presence, we go into the observer mode of observing our thoughts and our actions and our reactions. That is the pure awareness. And it's from there, it's no judgment. It just looks on what's going on. It allows us then the space to conduct an inquiry. And then the other part of that inquiry is this, is the answer is actually already known, and the answer comes in the third part, which is the quantum forgiveness.
Mm.
And here I might explain that it's very different to your normal run-of-the-mill forgiveness model. The regular kind of forgiveness model that we work with, and is very much the ego's mode of forgiveness, is based on, firstly, something happened and that was real and it was done by a separate individual, separate to us, or a separate issue out there in the world, whatever it is, circumstance. And so that was real. The second part is that we got hurt by it and we make that real.
Right.
The third part then is that we then try to be big enough to forgive the other person, party, or circumstance,
mm-hmm.
which wraps up all three of those issues, all three of those points I just made, and makes it real, you
mm-hmm.
see? So that exercise of forgiveness, or that model working in this paradigm of the ego, actually seeks only to confirm that hurt and pain are real. It does nothing to progress us.
Right.
Nothing at all. And that might be shocking, because a lot of people might think, hey, I'm really good at forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But really, all we've done is further entrench the view that, A, we're separate individuals, B, this whole life is very real, and C, I'm in charge, I being the ego self is in charge of this life. You know, God's asleep, I'm in charge sort of thing.
Right.
But with quantum forgiveness then, what we're talking about is the recognition that there is only one of us. Okay, we are all one.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to the initial idea of separation, that we wanted to experience otherness. We thought we could experience otherness. And in that moment, in that mad idea, it's like we fell asleep and went into a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And as everybody can identify, when we dream, it seems real, doesn't it?
It does.
The whole thing seems real.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the dream that we fell into.
Mm-hmm.
Now, quantum forgiveness is about trying to remember that this is just a dream, that in our original state, which we are still in, we are one. We're still the one.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that I see outside of me has been made up in my mind and projected through my eyes, right? So there is, all that's happening is, if I've lost peace, if something outside seems to have caused me to lose peace, it can only be some part of myself as yet unaccepted or as yet unforgiven.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So what we need to do is practice quantum forgiveness by going, aha, right, it's only some part of me that is crying out for forgiveness, that has made an error, a mistake, right? Mm-hmm. So I forgive that mistake by overlooking it and recognizing that when I extend that forgiveness, really I'm extending it just to myself. It's a lovely side benefit that the other person or the other circumstance will be forgiven in the process, but it's not your normal forgiveness. It's an overlooking of error. The key part that's missing in all of that is, you hurt me, but I'm going to forgive you. See?
Right.
That's missing completely. It's mm-hmm. just a recognition that an error has occurred, and I'm withdrawing my projections that you are separate from me.
Right, and that you had the initiation of that, because it's actually me.
Yep.
I'm creating it.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'm the only. Yeah, maybe a lovely saying to remember for people along with PIQ is that there's nobody else in the room.
Exactly. Well, isn't that, well, I know it is. The first lesson in A Course in Miracles on day one is nothing in this room is real.
That's right.
There you go.
I read that in 1994, and I went, you know, through the first two pages I read, and then I went to the lesson, and nothing in this room is real, and I went, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And to find a peace, to awaken, mm-hmm. does demand vigilance, and that's why the course has set out 365 lessons, one lesson per day, because it's the ego is the default system. So it ain't going to go anywhere, just like any default system on your computer. It ain't going to go anywhere by itself.
No.
You actually have to be hands-on, consciously and with vigilance and discipline, practicing the undoing. And this is where the PIQ comes in so handy, because the second you fall out of peace, mm-hmm. you can go bang into the now moment. What's going on? Ah, it's only me in the room. There's only one response, right? Because
mm-hmm.
every act is either an act of love or it's a cry for love. If it's a cry for love, what is the only response? Another great question for your listeners to ask themselves is to write this one down. It's, what would love do?
What would love do?
Right? Because love would certainly not start swearing at the other person.
Well, no. And you know, when I'm listening to this and I'm hearing you say this, I have to say that sometimes this whole dichotomy is actually going on within people in their self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do carry this within ourselves as well.
Yeah.
I know with myself I call it monkey mind, because I start going in circles with my thoughts, and I have to stop myself and ask myself, am I coming from fear or am I coming from love?
That's
because
it.
Two major bases of what A Course in Miracles talks about, it says there is only love and there is only fear.
Yep, and one of them isn't real.
Guess which one that is, everybody.
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. It takes vigilance because, you know, we have paid so much attention and invested so heavily in making this life real, in making this mistaken identity we call ourselves real, that it requires work to undo that, because Right from birth, and most of us were born to parents who also hadn't undone their ego, so they were believing that this life is real. So that means from day one, what we learned was that to value all of those things that, you know, beyond their value, like, for example, intellect, knowledge, reasoning, our senses, right?
Judgment.
Feelings. I mean, how many times do you hear people say, yes, but I feel this, you know? Yes, we can acknowledge that you feel that, but actually beyond that, beneath that, above that, is something else, and that's that peace that we just don't know. And we don't know because the ego keeps us hopping. It's got an agenda, and the agenda is to either seek pleasure and or avoid pain.
Right.
Both of those scenarios keep us either in the future or the past. So
right.
we're never in the now to actually clue in to what's going on.
Exactly.
And if you think about the average day for most people now, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the second that alarm clock rings, the mind starts filling up with thoughts and worries and agendas and so on, and we race. We race through the day till we get home. if we've had a big day, then what we want is time out or zone out. And so that's not really getting in touch with ourselves. That's like turning on the TV, you know, grab a beer, whatever it is, but it ain't tuning into spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully we get to a point where we're so tired, we go to sleep. So it's actually conceivable that we could go days, weeks, months without actually being present here.
Oh, yes. I think that we know people that do that.
Mm. And we need to make that contrast so that people can see for themselves, like, wow, if being present is tuning in and listening to that little voice within, when mm-hmm. was the last time I actually did that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's okay. I saw something in the book I loved. The three main ingredients of conscious love are, number one, commitment to each other's growth, i.e. creation of a unified goal. Number two, complete personal responsibility, i.e. recognizing that we project our own reality. That's huge. And number three, seeing any conflict as an opportunity for us to heal our perception undo the ego. That right there is life shaking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if people understood that they have the opportunity every time that something is discomforting them, or as we call it in NLP, we call it discordance. When something causes discordance within you, you have now got the opportunity for healing.
Yes.
If they just understood, this is not an obstacle, this is an opportunity.
Yes, it's not an attack.
No.
It's an opportunity for healing, and it's an opportunity to take responsibility.
Exactly.
But Roxanne, can I just go way back to the beginning?
Absolutely.
For a minute, if we've got time, because I'm guessing that some listeners will still be asking the question, what exactly is the ego? And what we found from talking with people is that most people think the ego may be a part of themselves, just a small part, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, let's just talk about what it is. And so
okay.
then from that basis, we can understand how insidious it is
mm-hmm.
and how
unable it is
yeah,
to love.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what the ego is our belief in separation. It's a belief that we're all separate. That we're not one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a thought that the world is being done to us, not by us,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's mm-hmm. also a thought that's apart from God, and this is a big one. The ego is the free will we think we have, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's apart from God, apart from the will of God. It's like saying, well, you know, God's asleep and I'm in charge. And if most of us are honest, that's what we think. We think that God's asleep and we're in charge because we don't trust God. We don't trust the source or whatever you want to call that. We believe we must control our life and therefore control everybody outside of us. So what the ego actually is nearly all our thoughts, all our beliefs and all our values up till now. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's any sense of fear or guilt, any anger, any judgment, loss, any belief in scarcity at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And any need to control. I don't know about you, but I've had plenty of times where I've needed to control. Yeah.
Thought I needed control. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. It's a
but it was an illusion.
Yeah, it's an illusion. But you don't know that till you're willing to look at all of this.
Absolutely.
Yeah? So if we can just say that any feelings of loss of peace will be the ego.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In other words, in a nutshell, it's the I we believe we are.
Mm-hmm.
It's
the identity.
I believe I am.
Right.
Okay. And it does have a mantra, and its mantra is seek and do not find.
Right.
So this is all unconscious, and we wonder why we have relationships that break down or wane. You know, love can turn to hate. We wonder why we can have a great job and it breaks down, a great career, and that breaks down. We wonder why we have accidents or illness, and it all comes from this one belief, which is the ego's, which is seek and do not find.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about love for a sec.
Oh, yes, I did want to talk about that, and special relationship, too.
Yeah.
I want to get to that if we get a chance, because you were kind enough to point out in the book that it doesn't take having a significant other in your life to practice this. However, yeah. It does make it a little bit easier, but you can do it on your own.
Oh, you can do it on your own, most definitely, yeah.
I've been talking with my clients about the holy relationship and how the holy relationship resides within. But I would love it if you could talk about love, special relationship, and holy relationship. That, I think, is, like, huge with your book.
Thank you.
Oh, good, please.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's talk about what we call, or the Course in Miracles calls, the special relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the sort of relationship that most of us are geared towards. It's the relationship of the ego. It's mm-hmm. called the special relationship, as opposed to the holy relationship or the unified relationship, which is a conscious relationship. See, what the ego does is it's addicted to separation. And like we said before, it's unconscious, all right? So mm-hmm. most of the love that we gravitate towards through the ego is either physical in nature, or physical or sexual, or emotional, or both, all right? See, all of the relationships we have with our family and our loved ones are usually emotionally based, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Those that we have with our partners or our lovers are as physically based, yeah? But mm-hmm. both of them set us up for separation and specialness. Specialness mm-hmm. is what keeps the ego alive. It keeps us separate. What specialness does is it says, look, I'll love you if you do what I want. Okay?
Right.
That's the unconscious mantra that it has there with that.
The barter system.
And, yeah. And with the holy relationship, or the unified relationship, what we're heading for is we might have emotions involved, we might have a physical or sexual relationship involved, but they're not our goal anymore, right?
Right.
Our goal then becomes a conscious relationship. The goal shifts from being me and do what I want, to what can we do together to heal? That's the goal of the holy relationship.
And it sees each other then as the opportunity. Now, as you rightly said, and we pointed out in the book, it only takes one, because you can practice that every day with every person that you meet in your life.
Oh, that's true. That's absolutely true.
So love, the ego doesn't know love. I mean, those first two areas are the ones that we call love and that we know love. But what we're talking about in the book, that everybody can attain, and through the attaining of the holy relationship, we can have that awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's through working with our brother, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's working with anybody that comes into contact in our life. Every time we see them as one, as us, right? Every time we're able to practice quantum forgiveness, we are forgiving some of that unconscious guilt at the thought of separation, and we're actually seeing the other person as part of us, as the oneness, yeah?
Right.
And so that becomes the goal. And if that becomes the goal, then what happens is that everything else aligns, because what was once a conflicting situation or presses our buttons, or annoys us, becomes, as we said already before, a wonderful opportunity for healing, right?
Absolutely.
So what this does is it breeds a new spiral, and it's an upward spiral. It's one of gratitude. We actually are grateful to each other, and we're thankful to each other for being in our lives as teachers, because we're both teachers and we're both learners all at the same time.
All of us.
And all of us. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the guy who runs the milk store down the street, if he's a cantankerous person, is a wonderful forgiveness opportunity. Because all it is that cantankerous part of us that we don't want to accept as us.
I saw that in the book. I loved how you explained that every time we come up to another person, they are our perfect teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I see that cantankerous milk seller as
yep.
as that perfect opportunity to teach us of this ego letting go, and also I'm resonating with the aspect of not taking it personally.
That's a big one.
Ooh,
that's
well, wouldn't
a big
it be
one,
kind
Roxanne?
Of egoistic to take it personally?
Yeah, that's totally ego, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. As opposed to seeing that the oneness has found another little spot that needs some healing and cleaning up.
Absolutely.
Which is the way to look at it. But we do take it personally. And
mm-hmm.
I think especially in any kind of relationships, whether it's you know, between lovers or brother and sister or, you know, parent to child, these tend to hold a lot of emotional fire. And so for those reasons, or like our boss and coworkers, those tend to be wonderful ground, fertile ground for our healing. And that's how we need to be looking at them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Something I wanted you both to talk about that I think is probably going to be, there are people out there listening right now, I know, that are going to be rather confused about something, and you need to explain it so that they can understand what it is you both have done. You are both a married couple that have now, since you are no longer married?
No. Well,
is that right?
Put it this way.
Yes, that's correct.
That's right.
Okay.
We are a loving, divorced couple.
Okay.
and the journey, I guess, the journey is quite remarkable in its own way, because like most individuals, we came together in a relationship having already experienced wrecked relationships where it appeared that love could turn to hate.
Mm-hmm.
And when we met, we still fortunately held the belief that love is eternal, so there's something else going on here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Love is limitless, and love is everlasting.
Right.
And through working through A Course in Miracles and the journey to set each other and therefore ourselves free, right? And when I say free, again, there could be a misunderstanding here.
Yes.
It's free in the sense of supporting each other's spiritual growth. In spite of what those quests might provoke in terms of fear within us, right?
Yes.
So this often happens. You hear couples say, oh, what, we grew apart, or I grew in a different direction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All that is separation out of fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, whoa, the heat's getting too hot in the kitchen, I'm going to cut, and I'm going to exit stage right. This is what usually happens. What we found also, though, was that, you know, as I was saying, both of us entered into this relationship with full tilt ego, and so within a couple of years, we had a dysfunctional relationship on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we embarked on A Course in Miracles and the journey to wholeness and to waking up.
Mm-hmm.
What we found, and we're not advocating this to any other couple, but what we found was that the ego was still very much there, living within the form of the relationship, which we had called marriage, right?
Right.
And so there was still, if you like, the ego's, you see, the ego says that gives us security, but actually what it does is it breeds fear, because underneath that is, oh, will I lose you? And if we weren't married, what would happen? Would you be gone? Would it be lost forever, right? Which
right.
is what most people would think. So we decided that, no, hang on, you either believe it or you don't. There's no gray area, you know. Either love is real and eternal or it's not. So in our case, what we decided to do was abandon the form of the relationship being marriage so that we could save our relationship.
And bring it to a deeper level, an actual real true level of the holy relationship with the real love within.
Yeah, and I can honestly say to you that I was very insecure at the thought of doing away with the form of the relationship
mm-hmm.
at the time, because I thought that I would lose Nook. And instead what I found is that here I am 10 years after that separation and divorce took place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living here, when we tour the States, I come over and I live with Nook and her husband.
Mm.
And he's like a brother to me. Now that might be frightening to most people, but it's interesting because it's a clear example that no fear exists and resides, no threat resides within us.
Oh, wow.
And it's the proof, right? For us, it's a wonderful proof because we can look at each other, the three of us, and look at each other and go, anybody feeling scared here?
Wow.
Nope. Anybody feeling threatened? Nope. Anybody perceive a danger or sense of loss? Nope.
That's amazing to me.
So it can happen, you know, it can happen. And And it is true that love is ongoing and everlasting. And so the beauty of undertaking that journey, and as I say, it's not about having to separate or divorce to go to that extent.
No.
We did it because, you know, every time we talked about this subject as we were going through this with other teachers and so on, you know, their eyes would bug out and basically they'd call for the exorcist, you know? You know what I mean? Because what it did was provoke the fear that was within them. And they were like, oh, my goodness, you know, and bye, I just realized I got another appointment. See ya.
Well.
So for us, what we're trying to do is shine a mirror back to people and say to them, hey, if you believe love is real, guess what? We got good news for you. It is. You just have to be prepared to, as you pointed out, the 3 points in that book, in
Absolutely.
Our book, you know, you got to be prepared to take ultimate and full responsibility for yourself. You have to be able, you have to have the desire to turn the goal over from a self-seeking goal, you know, the ego's, what can I get from you,
right.
to what is our holy purpose here. And the only holy purpose is waking up and mm-hmm. forgiveness, which go together and are interchangeable.
Okay. So then, because that was confusing me. I wasn't sure if you were... if you were coming from a perspective of being in support or non-support of marriage, you're neither non-supporting of it or supporting of it, because it's an identity that some people have, as long as it's not their identity and ego.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
It's whatever is the attachment, right? We've got to be prepared to go beyond that attachment, right?
Okay.
In other words, that's fine. You know, marriage is great, but don't use it to trap each other.
No.
Use it to grow within it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Deepak Chopra actually talks about that a lot in his 7 Ways to Success and Wisdom.
Mm.
He talks about it a great deal. The only way to truly find peace and joy within is to radiate from a space of detachment with all. And he talks about the illusory world outside of us. I think if everybody woke up and became conscious tomorrow and realized that the outside world that they see through what you show in your book as the beads that surround us.
Yes, the ego identity beads.
Right, and I call that the aura.
Yep.
The aura shell, if you will.
Yep.
If everybody were to understand that that's not actually real and that they are just a vibration, you talked about the quantum physics aspect in your book, and I loved the way that you summed that up because I stumble on it all the time. But you summed it up rather articulately with the ego reality, or excuse me, the quantum reality that we're all just a vibration.
Mm-hmm. And nothing's existing in reality until we observe it. So it's
mm-hmm.
our mind's belief and intention that creates it, that makes it.
Exactly.
If we just illustration in the book that the projection illustration that
yeah.
clearly shows and very simply shows how we, with our mind, project our reality,
mm-hmm.
okay? And what we do is we project our reality, but we forget that we're projecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it as being separate from us and real, and then we react to our unconscious projected reality,
mm-hmm.
all right? Which further reinforces that this illusion seems real, and that's what causes our suffering.
Oh, yeah.
And really, when you look at it, it's quite the black comedy. Because imagine, so it's like you think up a thought and then you project it out and you see it in the world and you forget that you made it up. Now, if that isn't the funniest thing going, I don't know what is.
Yeah, but
right?
it's...
We forget that we made it up and then we act aghast like, oh my God, look at this. What's happening around here?
That's what we all do, though. That's part of what the illusion of this lifetime is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what we got to wake up to. You know?
Absolutely. As a life coach with my background in NLP and timeline therapy, I'm
yep.
constantly talking about that. I work with clients a lot that say, well, I can't be hypnotized, and I always have to stifle my laughter.
Yes.
But when I explain to them what hypnosis really is, they look at me in astonishment and say,
yeah.
you mean I'm not conscious now? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That is wonderful.
It's true, though. When they finally get that, then they get very quiet and they succumb very easily to allowing the change to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's true. Nobody comes into our lives that isn't looking for change, wanting change, and open to it.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is what is the payoff here? And this is the interesting part, I think. You know, we say we all want peace. We say we all want unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all you have to do is glance around your neighborhood and see that that ain't so. We might mouth those words,
right,
but that ain't so. Because underneath, we still think we're in charge, and we still think that somehow really, really walking the spiritual path demands sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just the furthest thing from the truth.
Isn't
but
it, though?
But we do have this unconscious belief that's driving underneath that says, hey man, you know, like, you got life made right now. If you're going to go down the spiritual pathway, next thing you're going to be in loincloth with a begging bowl, dude. You know?
So in your trainings, to summarize, what would someone be experiencing when they come to one of your workshops and one of your seminars?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's a lot of fun.
I can get that. I get that you both are very upbeat people. I've had nothing but fun talking with both of you.
It's a lot of fun because we use our own life examples that we can have a good laugh at so that people can resonate with those examples in their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so we work through this experientially. And I think the word experiential is the key to the workshop. It's about getting in touch with all of those blocks that we have experienced within ourselves,
mm-hmm,
and those times when we have experienced pure love, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I just finished writing an article. You know, awakening is a doing thing. We can study till the cows come home, and what we will end up with is being a scholar, right?
Right.
We can meditate till the cows come home and have terrific insights given to us. But if we don't act on them, they're just a mental construct.
Take action.
You got to take action. And this is what this workshop is about. It's about taking us to that first step, right? So that we're ready for action. And actually, we have something in our book on the first step, which, if it's okay with you, can we read to you?
Oh, please. I was going to read to you, but you read to me.
Oh, you can read to us, too.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, during the workshop, we cover the six stages of spiritual awakening. Well, at least we take people through what they could expect as they're going through this period of spiritual awakening. I think that's really, really important because,
mm-hmm,
you know, it is one big question mark for most of us on the spiritual journey. So we do that. We take them through. But in the first and second stages, which are can be quite challenging, the first and second stages of spiritual awakening, the first and second stages, there is a first step involved in that, and I think I might just take this straight from the book. It involves the willingness to acknowledge that we know nothing in terms of truth,
mm-hmm,
and that we are prepared to demolish any barrier we have towards it.
Mm-hmm.
It's to commit to unlearning almost everything we thought was reality, including our own limited identity. It's, mm-hmm, to take full responsibility for our past and the reality we create daily. There's no room for helplessness here. And to accept that the initial phase of this process is likely to raise many fears, we need to face those fears rather than avoid them.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, to realize that all change in the direction of self-realization is beneficial, even though it may be uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
That's really important for the beginning. And, you know, the other thing too, Roxanne, for, mm-hmm, the listeners here is that what precipitates the desire to spiritually awaken? And what we can safely say here is the true desire to do the discipline of spiritual awakening usually doesn't come about just from feeling great.
No.
It usually comes about, from experiencing a crisis or a series of crises where, you know, like a relationship breakdown, depression, illness, an accident, you know, something like that, it leads us to the point where we just go, look, hey, this stuff's not working anymore. All of the teachings that I've had so far, my values, my beliefs, just don't work anymore, and I do need a better way, and I'm willing to look at another way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not till that point that we really will commit to actually doing the discipline, mm-hmm, of the awakening and to releasing the cause, the one cause of suffering, because the ego is the suffering factor in our lives. And the more we undo the ego, of course, the less suffering we experience. But the ego tells us that's the opposite.
Mm-hmm. So as you're going through the six stages, did you want to tell them what those stages are?
Sure.
The first stage is undoing. And like I said before, we usually meet this stage through some type of crisis, like a relationship breakup, a death, a career
mm-hmm.
loss, or identity crisis, depression, accident, etc. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there is some intense conflict going on within,
right?
Because you know, what worked before and we thought was safe doesn't work anymore.
Right.
We're looking for a better way, and we open our minds to perhaps surrendering our own will, the will that's apart from God, and looking towards the unified will or God's will, right?
Right.
So there's a bit of conflict. We're asking for God's will to come in, and at the same time we're not willing to relinquish our ego will. So that happens for a while,
mm-hmm.
okay? So there's a collision of two different beliefs. And then in we keep going, and we go to stage two, sorting out. Things are still a little uncomfortable here, because what we're finding is our values and beliefs are raised for sorting out. We begin to see what doesn't work anymore for us, and we are also looking at practicing regularly with others, with our family, with our loved ones, you know, and with people at work or around us. We're looking at practicing at prioritizing peace. We're looking at taking responsibility for all of our projections, all of our relationships, any seeming conflict that goes on around us. We're not blaming others so much anymore. We're not blaming situations, and we're not blaming God as much as, and we're taking more responsibility for that, right?
Right.
But that leads us to the third stage, which is relinquishment. We all hate that word, relinquishment, but it's very positive in this sense,
mm-hmm.
in this process, because we're learning to actually relinquish those values and beliefs or thoughts that held us back in the past.
Mm-hmm.
See, we've identified them in stage one and two. In stage three, we're learning to actually relinquish them. We're still fearful because we think, oh, God, if we relinquish these, we're going to sacrifice, right, something mm-hmm. valuable. But what we find as we relinquish them is there's no sacrifice at all. In
right.
fact, the opposite occurs. We start to get this great sense of peace, this great sense of strength, this great sense of trusting in the idea of surrender, which is something we've never even looked at before in our lives, because the ego has told us, well, you know, if you surrender to the will of God, you're going to die, right? So that's when a miracle really does occur in a lot of the facets of our life, where we begin to accept that all change is helpful. Now, that's a big statement to make.
Absolutely.
Because up until that point, anything that changes that has caused us, you know, like an expectation that hasn't come true, we've gone, oh, well, something's wrong. Right?
Mm-hmm.
In stage three, we look at, well, I tried to do A. I applied for this job, say, right? And I was hoping to get that job, but circumstances are out of my control and I didn't get that job. So we look at it differently. We don't look at it as a failure. We look at it as, oh, well, this must be divine will coming in and it's going to give me a better job, right?
Right.
So we see that. We see that all change is helpful, no matter even if it makes us uncomfortable at first.
Absolutely.
Which opens us up to the fourth stage. The fourth stage is one of my favorite stages out of the six, the fourth and the sixth stage. Fourth stage is a period of rest. Here we can see our whole way out. Here is this great peace. There's incredible insights coming in. Our relationships are rich. Our relationships mirror to us that we're not just okay, but that we are love. And, you know, we start to really feel like we're being a co-creator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The hitch on stage four is that we could mistake this stage for enlightenment, but it would be premature enlightenment. Okay? And we do talk about this in depth in the workshop, because I fell into that trap in 1995 myself.
Oh, did you?
So, yeah, I sure did. And I had a great 2.5 year ride. And I was so sure that there was no more work to do after that. But then I needed to fall into the fifth stage, which is unsettling. I don't like that word. I'm sure you don't either, Roxanne.
No, it's unsettling. You're absolutely right.
Unsettling, right? It's a reality check. It's like, okay, now what just happened there? I touched the face of God, but now I'm forced to come back to reality.
Exactly.
What often happens at stage four, what often can happen is the I we think we are, which is still the ego, tends to get enlightened, right?
The and ego gets enlightened.
Yes.
Yeah, it thinks it's in charge.
It still thinks it's in charge to a certain degree, although it's not.
So we
have to have this reality check. And what happens at stage five is a lot of the earlier tests that we had, a lot of the earlier relationship and tests or career and all this sort of thing might come back to revisit us in a different form. And we'll look at them and go, hey, I've already done this. Why do I have to do it again? But this time we find, hey, it's not anywhere near as bad. It's much easier. But it's just another, I guess, test for us to go through and do these particular lessons,
mm-hmm.
but this time with consistent awareness and vigilance, right?
Right.
And without the
resistance.
Without resistance, but without taking it personally. You know how you were mentioning about
right.
taking things personally. We don't feel the emotional charge this time, right? And we're mm-hmm. quite uplifted by that to see that we're going through this without the emotional charge, and it's an amazing healing journey. Stage five. We also find at the conclusion or near the conclusion of stage five that there are no hierarchy of illusions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this took us years to get because, yes, we understood the Course says, hey, this entire life's an illusion.
Right.
But both Tomas and I'm sure that's true for anybody on the spiritual awakening path, says, yes, I can see that a lot of it's illusion, but, hey, I have five or six illusions here that are real.
Yeah, I can relate with
right?
that.
And don't threaten them for God's sake. Right? They're my sacred cows. Don't take them out of that sacred closet. And right, so stage five, you have to take them out of that closet. You have to look at them and go, hang on a minute. I am not the judge of whether these are real or not.
Mm-mm.
So this is where we learn there is no hierarchy of illusions, that they're all the same. And this is where we really do begin to come into this incredible period of love, of peace, and of being, of feeling a co-creator with the Source, with God.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where God works through us. In other words, what we've done up until stage five is we've undone the thought of separation, the separated I, and then we find that what's left of us,
mm-hmm.
of course, we still have to retain a small thread of the ego in order to live in this dimension, but that thread that's left of ego, it doesn't belong to the separate I anymore. It belongs to the Source. And then we gladly join with the Source and we realize the Source's will for us, which is absolute joy and abundance.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an inconsistent joy and abundance.
Absolutely.
It's all inclusive. We become a living conduit for the divine will to express itself. And that's when we find ourselves landed in stage six, achievement. Okay,
mm-hmm.
we don't know any lack. We don't know scarcity, and we're able to actually extend that to others in a pretty miraculous form.
Wow!
And this is the beginning, not mm-hmm. the end. This
no.
is the beginning.
I'm getting from this, I'm listening to this, and it resonates with me that if people were to get this right now, that this is about everything in life, not just about love. This is about your entire being, this
oh,
your
yeah.
career. It's everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If they were to get this and get that it's not about creating it any specific way, but just realizing, I actually, when I was doing A Course in Miracles in 94, when I first started it, I said a prayer to be the vessel and the vehicle for the healing and the light.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice, and I have been at different points in time, and I truly believe that that's what you're saying to people. If they open themselves up to be this vessel, to be this vehicle, they never have to put out, you know, like we say in The Secret all the time, you wouldn't have to focus on manifesting anything any longer.
Yes.
No.
Because
it's immediate, it's instantaneous.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Roxanne.
Well, I told you I was reading the book. I've almost done.
Yeah, no, you've hit the nail on the head there because only the ego would have to work at effort and daily put out. You know, when you're
yes.
co-creator, there's no more putting out. It doesn't mean that you snap your fingers and everything happens.
Yes.
But it does mean that you could find yourself over a period of time doing 12 hours a day on what you're into, But guess what? You are not cranky at the end of it, because the whole time has been your passion. The whole time you've been creating. The whole time has seemed spontaneous. The hours have passed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even know what happened to the hours.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So you're not tired at the end of it. It's the tiring part can only come when we're efforting from the ego.
Oh, goodness. I'm constantly trying to teach my downline this. I do network marketing, too.
Yep.
And it's not an easy task, because they're coming from other experiences where it's all about ego.
Yep. Yep.
And I'm going to have to suggest to each one of them, they're in different parts of the country, to go to every single one of your seminars I can get to.
Please do, because really, it is a godsend, this piece of truth,
mm-hmm.
That we've worked towards and then discovered, or should we say rediscovered, because it's
mm-hmm.
who we are anyway.
Absolutely.
But the thing is that the joy, and imagine if you said to somebody, in this line over here, please sign up for 12-hour days where you'll feel tired, get sick, have disease, right? Over here, we have laughter, silliness, fun.
You know what line I'm in.
Yeah, you know what I mean? No more efforting, and all your needs are met.
Abundance and peace and joy.
Yep. And all your needs are met.
Oh,
you don't have to
one.
Think about it. And
I
yet there's
it.
This huge long line on the suffering end. Now, if that isn't a black comedy, I don't know what is either.
Everybody, it's takemetotruth.com. In case I forget to say that, takemetotruth.com. And you guys are going to be everywhere. You're going to be in Seattle on the 22nd of March.
Yeah, we've got Indianapolis, too, and we have Atlanta, Georgia, Denver.
On the 5th of April.
We've got Indianapolis on March 29th, Atlanta,
uh-huh.
5th of April.
Mm-hmm.
We have a quantum spirituality symposium there in Atlanta. Yeah.
Oh, wow,
and then we also have Denver, Colorado, Baltimore, Maryland, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and we have Rhode Island, New York City, and we have a 5-day workshop, Roxanne, which is
mm-hmm.
a very intensive workshop, a wonderful experience for those who really want to do this and do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 5-day workshop, and it's at the Omega Institute in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And we also have a 4-day workshop in Kiel, Wisconsin, too. And the website is takemetotruth.com.
Absolutely. And you've got one in Portland, Oregon. I can go to either
yes.
one, the Seattle or the Portland.
Oh, you've got to come.
Oh, yeah, I know I do.
We're going to laugh our head off.
Oh, we will.
I'm so about that, because that is one of the true ways for us all to live longer, live healthier, and live happier.
Yeah, if we just didn't take ourselves so seriously, then, you know, it's such a relief, isn't it? It's like being able to put down these 100-pound bags that we've been carrying around with us.
Yes. The baggage. And what service does that truly give us as far as joy?
Mm.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It aches our hearts. And like Nuke so articulately put it, the ego keeps us in bondage and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go.
Yep.
And live
yep.
peacefully and happily in truth and love for the rest of your existence in this lifetime.
Yeah, we can have the happy dream then,
mm-hmm.
right? Because like a dream, imagine if you could go into it and you could say, hey, you know what? There is nothing that could possibly happen to you.
Exactly.
Now go and play.
Exactly.
If we really knew that, wow, what a life.
So everybody, go to my website, createabundancenow.net, or go to Nuke and Tomas's website, takemetotruth.com, order the book, and go to one of the seminars we mentioned. Go to their website, sign up now. I have never been so compelled to want to support a project in my life as I do this one.
Thank you. We are very grateful.
You know I'm serious.
Yeah, you're seriously going to have fun. That's what I know.
I know you are. Well, you guys take care. I've got to do a wrap-up here, and I'm just so blessed and honored you joined me.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you, Nuke.
It's been a delight to meet you, Roxanne.
See you soon.
Blessings. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That was amazing. And as we close, I want to remind everybody, our guest in 2 weeks is Dr. Anne Marie Evers, an ordained minister and doctor of divinity. She's the author of 4 books, three on affirmations. She has also got a project that she's recently taken on. You can go to her website at Anne, A-N-N-E, marieevers.com, And she also has taken on a project with kids. It's called Kid Power. If you go to kidspower.ca, it's out of Canada. It's an empowerment program for children. And I've got to leave now. Please go to my website at createabundancenow.net. We have a new project we started called Zrii, Z-R-I-I. It's a supplemental drink that is endorsed by Deepak Chopra. And we invite you on our journey with that, as well as Take Me to Truth. Have a wonderful day. Blessings to everybody. We appreciate you. Thank you.